This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome back to another edition of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on the Yak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com, and as OrangeBloods.com members know right now or are experiencing right now, it's a big day for Texas basketball because five-star Greg Brown III, a product of local Vandegrift, arguably the best prospect that's ever come out of Central Texas, just announced his decision to commit to Texas in an interview with ESPN and the Undefeated's Mark Spears. Obviously, this is a huge deal for the Longhorns, so it was time to do a special podcast, and I'm happy to say I'm joined today by Rivals.com national basketball analyst Corey Evans. Corey, let's just cut to the chase. How big of a deal is this for Texas?
It's a monumental win because not only did you beat the Blue Bloods, I mean, Kentucky and a Memphis, you know, an Auburn and Michigan, but you've also, you know, kept the kid close to home for college basketball. Someone that you really invested in for the past 4 or 5 years that knows everything about your program and wants to become a part of that program. So for someone like Shaka Smart and Coach Lucas and those guys, I mean, all that investment of time and energy and probably some headaches, it all has panned out. And, you know, to throw him onto a veteran-laden team next year, which is one that should only help Greg be better and Texas be better, it definitely raises their ceiling of what success might be like the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. You look right now at the roster that Texas currently has on paper, and it's the best that Shaka Smart's had during his time at Texas. And one of the main reasons why is what you just mentioned. It's Greg Brown joining a veteran group, veteran guards, a bunch of guys that have played a lot of collegiate minutes. You just brought up an interesting point that I realize it because I see it. You see it way more than me because it's usually this time of the year you are somewhere every weekend evaluating guys in person. And then also, too, during those evaluation periods, seeing what coaches or which coaches are watching which players. But this isn't like college football where, you know, sometimes these guys get recruited for maybe 2 years. But oftentimes it's a cycle that becomes really intensive for about a year, a little over a year. In the case of Shaka Smart, and definitely in the case of Jay Lucas, the primary recruiter here, this is a 4, maybe even 5 year type of investment of time. I can remember, you know, on some of the side courts where the younger guys would play, seeing Jay Lucas during an evaluation period watching Greg Brown. And I think this was when Greg Brown was probably going – the summer before his sophomore year. And, you know, as you know better than I, this is such a time investment for these coaches that when you're recruiting this caliber of player, you don't just recruit him for a year. You're oftentimes recruiting him for years and years and years. How much of an impact do you think that had in this decision?
Knowing who Greg is and the father is and the family is, I think it's crucially important. I think, relationships are super, super crucial to what Greg's about, to where he was going to go to college. And to have that reliable coach and relationship and person he can always lean on in a Shaka Smart, in a Jay Lucas, I think it was crucially important to just what made this decision today happen. You know, Greg staying at Vandegrift, that tells me a lot. Where you have all these other guys leaving for a year or two to go away to these big-time high schools like a Montverde or an IMG or an Oak Hill Academy. For Greg to stay all 4 years at Vandegrift, it just shows what kind of person he is and the things that he values the greatest.
Now, you mentioned early on, Texas, this was a big win for Texas because of some of the competition they beat in terms of college schools. I mean, whenever you have a Kentucky offer and they're in the mix, I mean, they're one of the true recruiting giants. obviously, we heard a lot throughout this process about Memphis. Penny Hardaway and Mike Miller have spent a ton of time recruiting Greg. And I think that, you know, there was probably a moment where if they weren't a leader, they were right there with Texas. And then even very later on in the process, you heard some things about Auburn too. So this was a big battle on the college front from Texas. But then at the end, the G League came in. And I guess they should say they came back, because it sounds like they kind of made their first go around with a lot of these guys a long time ago. And then very recently, they came back with even a more lucrative offer and a stronger offer and things like that. You know, from what you'd heard, how much consideration do you think the G League path got in this specific recruitment?
Yeah, I think it definitely was an intriguing factor, especially late in the ball game, and that what if factor. We're all human beings, right? Like we all love the what if. And he knew what Texas could offer, what Memphis could offer, what Auburn could offer, whoever it was. But it was always that, you know, out of left field, here comes G League and what if, and the money, and being one of the first to actually go down that route. It definitely had to be intriguing for Greg. But at the end of the day, I think once things kind of calmed down, and Greg and his family realized what was the most important factors for the next step in his journey in basketball, I think Texas and what all they could offer kind of won out.
You've watched Greg a ton. You've watched him way more than I have. As a guy that was he's on the Texas Titans with the UIBL circuit, and then obviously going to some of those other events as well that the top of the top guys get invited to. Give us your scouting report on Greg. I know that the first thing everybody notices, because I haven't seen many high school athletes like him in any sport, it's just the pure athleticism. I mean, it's truly incredible. But there's more to Greg Brown than just the athleticism aspect. Give us your scouting report on him, and you know, maybe a favorite like story or a moment where it kind of was like, whoa, this Greg Brown dude is going to be a special prospect.
Yeah, I think we all kind of knew Greg was special just because he's such a freak athlete. I mean, when I say freak athlete, he's a freak athlete. But I think the one time I actually went down to see him at his local high school gym and open gym and this past September, and I just think wasn't really just what he was doing on the floor, but it was in a way how he got along with his teammates. You see some guys that have some egos and the big-headed nature of being a top 10 prospect and kind of being coddled for 4 years. I mean, Greg's been a guy on the scene for 4 years, but just his mentality, man, he's just an awesome kid. And I think it's allowed him to see what he has to become better at. He's very, very coachable. I think every coach that has had him under their tutelage would say the same thing. So beyond just being the freak athlete he is, you know, he's a big-time competitor, someone who wants to get better, underrated, you know, passer and playmaker. His handles have gotten better. He shot the ball way better this past winter than he has in the past. So when you're talking about upward trajectory, Greg is definitely on that. And, you know, he's definitely going to rely on his athleticism to start. But he's more than just that. He's someone that can play different spots on both sides of the floor. He's someone that can produce in the half court and also in the open floor. And, again, getting back to his shot, it's gotten way, way better.
How rare is it in this era to see a prospect of his caliber – not leave his local high school? I mean, like a five-star top 10 type of prospect. I mean, how rare is it for that guy to finish, you know, where he started his freshman year at, when it's, I mean, Vandegrift, I mean, you saw it, some of his teammates, I mean, Vandegrift doesn't really have much of a basketball history, you know, like, you know, there's not really a bunch of banners on their walls. I can't think of any other player that came from Vandegrift basketball wise that was anything close to a high major prospect. Like, how rare is it for a kid to stay all 4 years at a place like that? Because I agree with you, and I think that says something about him as a young man and just kind of his mindset as he approaches, you know, just wanting to better himself as a basketball player and as a person?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more unique, especially for those guys that, like we said, has been on the radar for 4 years. And to say no to these national powers and to stay loyal, to stay local, doesn't happen much. Very rarely does it ever happen. I mean, even in the 2021 class, might be someone like a Paolo Banchero who goes to O'Day High School and Che Holmgren who goes to Minnehaha. But even those guys go to more reputable high school basketball programs compared to a Greg who goes to Vandergrift, who, as you said, man, like his team was not full of high or even any sort of Division I prospects. and the background isn't there for the program as a whole. So Greg is definitely a culture starter, a program starter, and I think he took a lot of pride in that.
Do you think that sort of thing can help him at the next level? Because, you know, from talking to his dad over the years and things like that, they're of the mindset, and I don't follow him at all. I agree with him that, you know, he could go somewhere like a Texas that has that kind of experience and just elevate those guys. Because we know when these guys go to college, you know, these types of prospects, I mean, it's just eyeballs are constantly all on them. And so many people just expect these guys to just take college basketball by storm immediately. And it's very, very, very rare that all freshmen don't have some sort of adjustment period. So there comes with that pressure and the expectations and things like that. But you know, do you think that he's kind of better equipped to handle that? And also too, with the fact that some of his family's just down the road.
Yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword in a sense, right? The negative is there might be a little more pressure on him, right? Being close to home, being the local kid.
Being the guy that gets Texas over the hump.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pressure there, right? But there's also that support base that he has from his father, from the whole family there, and from everyone that's kind of crossed paths with Greg. I mean, he's just an awesome kid, and it's going to be hard to find one person that would call him an enemy. So I think as a community as a whole, the whole Austin community is already behind him, backing him, supporting him, knowing that they were kind of responsible in a sense for raising him. Compared to these other guys that come into these towns or college cities that all they know is the name and the recruiting background, but don't know the kid himself. And these people know Greg. They know who he is. They know where he came from. And I think that goes a long way for someone like that. And I think it could be one of the primary reasons for why Greg does succeed this year.
I know we're kind of in an era of positionless basketball where it doesn't really matter as much as it used to, like what kind of number player you're labeled, whether you're labeled a two guard or a three or whatever it is. But how do you see Greg positionally fitting in at Texas? Just because he is a rare blend of athleticism and size and length, where do you think he ideally fits at the next level?
You know, I'd say he's probably a four right now, and that's nothing to detract from him being a wing player. I know he wants to be that kind of guy. He's far from being a low post prospect whatsoever. But the mismatch that he presents on the perimeter as a four man, with how athletic he is, how quick he is, how he can defend many spots on the floor. I mean, from the two through the five, probably because of his size, his length, his quick twitch abilities. Also, it kind of allows for Shaka to get back to what he had become accustomed to at VCU and attempted to push on at Texas following his first 2 years there, is, you know, kind of pick up the pace a little more. Never really had the personnel to do that. He might now. Greg is definitely the most talented player he's ever coached, and the most athletic person he's ever coached. And with Greg, you want to allow him to play to the pace and the tone that makes him the best, enhances his qualities. and that's up and down the floor, getting out, pressuring the basketball, offensively pushing the pace, all part of the ethos of what Shaka, what made him successful at VCU. He might get back to that now, I think, with having someone like Greg Brown.
Yeah, that's music to Texas fans' ears, and it's something I've written about. Is like, if you know, weeks ago was like, if Texas gets Greg and they don't play fast, I think I might lose my mind. I mean, that's this. You can't rank, like, you know, in the bottom fifth of NCAA basketball in offensive tempo. When you have a guy like that on a roster like that, you better be pushing the pace as much as you possibly can. Well, since Texas fans now don't hate the G League because it didn't steal away their prized local five-star prospect, I know you've done a lot of work and a lot of terrific reporting on this kind of new emergence into the world of basketball, most recently with Jalen Green making the jump, and also with Isaiah Todd as well. So I'm just kind of going to give you the floor. Like, how big of a deal do you think this is for, you know, amateur basketball from the high school ranks, but also to the impact it could potentially have on college? Like, give us kind of, from what you know, just kind of the lowdown on the G League and what kind of impact you think it'll make. I don't get the sense at all that this is just a fad or a one-time thing. I think that this is going to be something we talk about every recruiting cycle with a handful of guys. You know, what are your thoughts and what kind of impact do you think the G League is going to have just on basketball recruiting and also college basketball as we know it?
Yeah, as you said, this is definitely here to stay. It's more for one cycle. I think when it was created in 2018, it was more for, hey, here's $120,000. We'll put you on a G League team. That wasn't enough. I mean, these elite high school prospects, they're not going to risk it like that. Once we started seeing someone like RJ Hampton go overseas to the NBL, Adam Silver kind of stepped in and said, hey, like, we can develop these guys too. Let's keep them here in the States. So that's where we're at now with these giant offers, right? Like Jalen Green making over $500,000, Isaiah Todd, $350,000 maybe. Does it hurt the college game not having a Jalen Green? It definitely does. I mean, we would have loved to have seen a guy like that. Or think about Greg Brown. I mean, those abilities are must watch. But it's being taken out of context. This is not for the top 30 or 40 players in any given year. For the first year or two, it's for a select group that is 4, 5, or 6 players, maybe even 2. I mean, it could just be Jalen Green and Isaiah Todd. They want to specify the elite of the elite. It's not like a college offer and schools or Ross Strickland and Sharif Abdurrahim are walking around and throwing out G League offers. Like, it's specific. They want to make it work. They need to make this year's group work, because if it does not work, there's no longevity, which goes back to there is expected to be longevity with this of having 4, 5, or 6 guys the first 2 years. That is my concern beyond that. If the one and done rule is still intact in 2022, I could see the divisions growing more and more. I could see 15 or 16 or 20 prospects being the amount any given year to go into this new program. Until then, we don't know. We don't know how it's going to work exactly. I've been told at most they're playing 20 games a year. They're playing against some G League teams. They're playing against some NBA Academy teams. They're playing against some overseas teams. But it's not really exactly a G League team. It's more of just under the G League umbrella. But the monetary investment is definitely there. Infrastructure is being built as we talk, as we speak, about getting the proper coaches to coach this team, the proper trainers to train these kids. And I wrote about yesterday about how the G League was actually lucky. And with someone like Greg Brown, I know this was used against him, or for the G League, was, okay, you want to go to Texas and play in front of all these fans. Well, guess what? With the pandemic going on right now, we don't know if fans are actually going to be in the stands. So it kind of put the G League on the same footing with where, okay, will there be a college basketball season? If there is one, will there be fans in the stands, right? The G League, with what they're selling, that development program at the Monmouth Sports Academy, that's going to be open for them regardless of if the coronavirus has the entire nation or college athletics shut down for the next 12 months or not. So in a sense, it might have been the safer of the two routes. But still, you know, as we talk on this matter, it's still all the X's and Z's, they're all still being put into place as of right now. So, you know, we'll see how the first year or two plays out. It's not for, you know, the demise of college basketball as we know it. But I will say college basketball with the proper bodies that be need to be proactive and forward thinking of how they can maybe squash this for future prospects and keeping them within the college ranks or having them in the college system.
Yeah, I think we could look back in a few years at specifically RJ Hampton as kind of the guy that was a little bit of a trailblazer from the sense that, you know, here's a guy committed to Kansas from the Dallas area, consensus top 10 overall prospect. I mean, those guys are always, you know, often stars in college basketball. And not only does that guy not play college basketball, he goes to Australia, you know, like we might look back at him as the guy that made some NBA decision makers kind of, you know, scratch their head and say, this might be an opportunity for us to keep those types of players at home and let them develop under our personnel and see where things go from there. Yeah, it's fascinating. I think a lot of people are going to watch and see how Jalen Green and how Isaiah Todd develop under this model. And I think that a year from now, when hopefully everything in the world is back to normal, when the G League has a lot of things just truly defined and something to point to, I think it's certainly going to be a bigger factor with a lot of those top prospects. But before I let you go, Corey, this is usually a time where you're, like I said, you're on the road. It's usually a time when college coaches are on the road. It's usually a time where I'm like starting to build a recruiting board for the next, you know, Texas basketball class of targets, and offers are flying out like crazy. What is life like for you right now? Like, are you going stir crazy because you're home so much and you're not in the airport going somewhere else to watch basketball? And how do you think coaches are adjusting to just this life of not being able to evaluate guys in person and kind of build their recruiting boards and being forced to, I used to use negatively, but I can't right now. These guys are kind of becoming YouTube scouters, like a lot of people on the internet. I think they know exactly what kind of player a guy is because they put on his highlight tape.
It's a new world, man. It really is a new world right now. I'm not gonna lie. The first week or two was, it was difficult, man. It was trying to break old habits and create better and newer habits. Just trying to figure out what I should be doing every day, every minute, every hour. A lot of phone calls, a lot of, as you said, film work, a lot of evaluations on that extent. As we speak today, I should have been on a flight to Atlanta for the Nike UIBL, the second live period. And that's, of course, as we know, not any longer. I really do feel for these members of the 2021 class. This was supposed to be their time, right? I don't really feel for, you know, maybe a Langston Love type that we know about because he's been out there. I mean, he's well known, but the guys I do feel more for is a guy like Jalen Tyson, who's at Pope John Paul II in Texas, who would have been a major breakout this year on the Nike circuit with Woods Elite. And all we know now about him is what he showed on film. And I was never a film guy. I like to be there. I like to have a feel. I like the tangibles, right? I can't have that. So I need to improve as a stay-at-home evaluator in a sense. So a lot of guesswork right now, a lot of work in the transfer portal for myself and the coaches. Every week is something different. And it's more of, are we going to have a July? Are we going to have a summer at all? Will we have a fall session? And saying that, should these prospects, these rising seniors, should they wait it out and see if there will be a travel season whatsoever? Will there be a fall season whatsoever? Or should they commit immediately and jump to the scholarship offer? There's so many what ifs right now. And you're going to see the more forward-thinking programs and proactive programs win out once this period no longer exists. And the ones that kind of sit on their hands and just hope that count the days down, it might be the programs that in 2-3 years they're out of a job.
Yeah, it's interesting times for sure. For Texas, probably not the best time to need to fill a big recruiting class, which is what it was going to look like in 2021 with how many projected seniors they have on the roster for the upcoming season. Well, Corey, man, thank you so much. I know you're a really busy guy. I joke that, you're not on the road right now like normal, but you're obviously doing a ton of work at Rivals.com. You guys are pumping out basketball content daily. I mean, did great work on that, the Jalen Green and the G League reporting stuff and keeping up with offers and all that sort of thing. And as we know, the transfer market is a little bit more active than normal, which I guess isn't too big of a surprise given that those guys are a little bit more in demand with the way the high school thing right now is. Yeah, and as you were saying that, I was thinking, man, like you described, Andrew Jones, Donovan Williams, Jace Febres, yep. Guys yep. that Texas signed that were guys that really made a name for themselves beginning right now when those programs were kind of extending those first offers and getting their really detailed looks at these guys in person. And, I hope that there's at least a point where these guys can maybe just have something to get on the floor, maybe once in front of some college coaches. And, if they are, that means the world's certainly in a better place, but we'll see. Definitely unusual times. You can follow Corey on Twitter at CoreyEvans_10. Again, he and the Rivals.com basketball team are pumping out a lot of great content and obviously some content today that Texas fans like, with Greg Brown III announcing his commitment to the Longhorns. The five-star from Vandergriff will join an experienced roster in what should be Shaka Smart's best Texas roster. All right, before I let you go, I'm gonna put you on the spot. Where do you think Greg Brown goes in the 2021 NBA draft?
I say
we're gonna hold you to this forever.
I will say, not saying a whole lot, I'll say top 10. I'll say 7 or 8, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe a little lower. A lot depends on that first year, and is he more. He has to prove that he's more than just an athlete.
Right.
And that's going to go a long way. Like we saw with a guy like Scotty Lewis his past year at Florida. Scotty had some troubles. And Scotty is, I'll tell you what, one of the mature guys out there that realized, hey, I need to get better. I'm going to come back to college. Now, granted, he was not going to be a lottery pick. He would have been a fringe first-round draft selection. But the 2021 draft is going to be awfully loaded with talent. We don't know how good with certain kids, still their names in the draft, they're going to pull it out. But we're talking about Evan Mobley and Jalen Green and Kay Cunningham and maybe a John Kuminga if he reclassifies. There's a lot of what ifs still and some kids that could reclassify and change the ball game up and the complexion of that draft class. But I think Greg is definitely a top 10 NBA talent, a lottery talent, and someone that an NBA franchise can build around.
There you have it. Write it in stone. Place your bets on your favorite online gambling website. That's where Greg Brown III will go in the 2021 NBA draft. But in all seriousness, Corey is absolutely right. That draft looks to be loaded. And I'm excited now that we get to see Texas Titans teammates Cade Cunningham and Greg Brown go at each other in a couple of Big 12 matchups this upcoming season, assuming, of course, we do get a college basketball season. But for Corey Evans of Rivals.com, I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. This is another episode of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on TheYak.com. Get to TheYak.com, check out all of our great podcast content, and get to OrangeBloods.com to read our coverage about Greg Brown III announcing his commitment to Texas. A huge, huge day for Shaka Smart and the Longhorns. In the meantime, stay safe, wash your hands, and until I talk to y'all next time, take care.